Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 379, and we're going to continue with Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 11. We ended up with verse 10 last time, where Moses is telling Israel that God is going to bring them to the land and is going to give it to them as a heritage, since he's a possessor of heaven and earth, and he is going to give them rest from all their enemies all around, and they shall be, you know, dwelling that land in safety. That is, if they are obedient, obviously, to God. And all that was dependent on that very fact. That's why he always told them, if you keep my law and commandments, and that's what God told them. Moses tells them the same thing, and he's speaking to all of Israel to this very day, that if we seek the Lord, you see, if we seek to obey him, to walk with him, he's going to give us peace and safety, be it on a national basis or on a personal basis. It works both ways. And so he's telling them in verse 11, then it shall come to pass that the place which the Lord your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there, there shall you bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes and the offerings of your hand, and all your choice vows, which you vow unto the Lord. And basically, he did not leave it up to them, no more than he left any detail in the building of the tabernacle up to them. You see, and certainly not the place of worship. And so, as entered into the land, Shiloh became the place of worship for them. That's where the high priest was, and that became the headquarters of the nation. And that's where all Israel came to worship God. On holy days, on the Sabbath, if they lived in the area, on the new moons, that's where they came for judgment and government decisions and many things like that. And this was the holy place that God has sanctified at that time, and later on he himself, through David, moved it to Jerusalem, and that's where the temple was built, and this is where Israel had to go, and this would be the headquarters from now on for Israel until the destruction and also into the future, where ultimately even the eternal headquarters of not only the earth but the whole universe is going to be in that very location. And so it's very important that people understand that God is the only one that determines what place is a holy city, and there is only one place on the face of the earth, and it's not any other place. You see? Therefore, man cannot build a temple or whatever he thinks is like a temple or something similar to that in any location that he wants. God does not accept that. He made it very plain throughout the scriptures. In the place where I put my name. A lot of people claim that God put his name here and here and here and this place and that place and at this feast site and that feast site and so forth. You see, God hasn't done that. That's the wishful thinking of men. God hasn't appointed different holy cities for different religions. You see, that's the wishful thinking of men. No, God has appointed only one central location. And he said, this is the place where I put my name. That does not mean in the future, where people are going to be obviously all around the earth, not everybody can come to Jerusalem, God is going to allow them to have their own places of worship, where they would come, as we read through the scriptures in many places, and bring offerings before him and sacrifices and incense on a daily basis, and they are going to have their priesthood also, in order to serve God and teach the people his laws and commandments, just like he does with Israel, so he's going to do with all the nations of the earth. That's going to be the model, you see. But nevertheless, headquarters would always be headquarters, and there is only one place, one holy city. All the others are not going to be holy cities. You see, they're going to be places of worship. And so there is a difference between a place where you come to worship God and between a place that you claim that God set his name there. Unfortunately, people have always done since the days of old. When Jeroboam separated from Rehoboam, the northern kingdom from the southern kingdom, well, he decided there are going to be two places where God put his name there. One is Bethel. Why? Because it's already recognized as the house of God. That's where Jacob met God the first time, and then when he came back and wrestled with him. And then in the pre-Sinai ceremony, that was taking took place also in that area. So it was very easy for him to say, well, Bethel is the place. And the other one was in Dan, in Laish, and that's where he put the second golden calf. You see, why would they choose that place? Well, that's because that's where the part of the tribe of Dan moved up there, taking with them the grandson of Moses. A lot of people don't realize that. The priest that went up with them and became their father, their leader, the spiritual leader, was actually a grandson of Moses. And the rabbis were so embarrassed about this fact that when he read it in Hebrew, instead of saying son of Moses, you know, they put an N on top there to make it son of Manasseh. You see, that was a willful, deliberate thing on their part to hide the truth, because they were embarrassed that a grandson of Moses is leading Israel astray into idolatry, and that was in the northern territory. And so he chose that place for a holy place. And then his people travel to other places. Well, they claim this is a holy place and that's a holy place. And God makes it very plain. It's only one place, that's the only place where you're going to bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices. And this is where the place where he is established. First Shiloh, then Jerusalem. These are the only two places on the face of the earth. Verse 12, and you shall rejoice before the Lord, your God, you and your sons and your daughters and your men servants and your maid servants and the Levite that is within your gates, for as much as it has no portion or inheritance with you. The land was divided among all, you see. And all the people received their own territory, all the tribes, but not the tribe of Levi. They were scattered throughout all the tribes of Israel. Yet all of Israel were supposed to give them their own cities and a little piece of land all around it. But it was not enough to take care of their needs, you see. So Israel had to take care of them. Beside the tithe that they were commanded to give and the offerings, also to make sure on a daily basis they are taken care of. And so that's what he's saying here. When you come before God to take care of your sacrifices and things like that, and obviously they did it during the holidays, they didn't come every day, they had to make sure that they take care of everybody at that time. Those who have a land and those who don't. And the ones that didn't, obviously the first were the Levites, and then those in hard conditions, be it Israelites that fell into economic wars, widows and orphans and poor people, whatever it may be, for whatever reason, and the aliens and the servants. In other words, that's the way God wants his people to behave. Make sure nobody goes hungry. Make sure nobody is destitute. Make sure nobody is in terrible condition where nobody cares about them. You see, because that's contrary to the royal law. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And that's in essence what later on Christ was bringing to their attention, that they were not doing it. The reason why they were lepers, the reason, you know, beggars out there, the reason why they were even prostitutes, you know, there were a lot of harlots in those days, you see, and many things like that, and strangers also, that may not be taken care of, and widows and orphans and things like that, is because people were not obeying the laws of God to take care of them. And even when they come before God for their celebrations, if they have no heart to care for those around them who do not have as much as they do, God is not going to accept their sacrifices. Oh, they can offer it, but God would not accept it. You see, and that's what counts. No, it doesn't count that the priest accepts it. It counts that God accepts it. You see, and that's the only way you can rejoice before him. And again, that's what Jesus Christ told the people, his own people, the disciples and others, that if you have something, when you bring your sacrifices before God, if you have something against your brother, you see, and here it is, you are coming before God to bring an offering, to rejoice before him. But he said, Lord, you've got a problem against one of your neighbors, your wife, your mate, you know, friend, whatever it may be, son, daughter, uncle, cousin, anybody, stranger, you got a problem, personal problem, you see, and it's not been resolved. You cannot come before the God of all, the Father of all, and rejoice before him while that problem goes on. God is not going to accept him. And so as he said, you know, you just leave your sacrifice over there, because it's not going to be accepted, and you go and reconcile to whomsoever. If a problem with, then you come back. You see? That's always the paramount law of God in everything. And so what you read here is just a part of it. And so he's enumerating every single one of them. He just didn't say, well, take care of everybody. He's saying your sons and daughters, well, first your own family. You got to take care of your own family first, not others, but first your families, and that's so he says the sons, and your daughters, and obviously his wife, and your men servants. You see, after your own household, then you go to those around it, your men servants and your maid servants, and the Levite that is within your gates, you see. In other places, he also said the strangers and the widows and the orphans and so forth. And only then God is going to accept whatever you bring before him. And so as for the Levite, he said he has no portion. Well, because he doesn't, because God made it that way, you take care of him. Take heed to yourself, he's warning them, that you offer not your burnt offerings in every place that you see. Well, Jeroboam didn't pay attention to that. Israel, for that matter, the entirety of the nation did not pay attention to that. Because as they began to go into idolatry, on every hill, wherever there was a big tree, they erected an altar, and there they began to offer to God, everywhere. You see? And they did not pay attention to this law of God. He forbade them to ever do it. And verse 14, he said, but in the place which the Lord shall choose, he has to make the choice, and he's going to let you know where. You see? And that's the place where you go. So in the place that the Lord himself shall choose, in one of your tribes, there you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there shall you do all that I command you. It's not a choice. It's not each does that which is right in his own sight. You see? And that's the way God ruled his nation, his people, his wife. And in essence, for his wife to go and offer anywhere she wants, it's as if his wife, you know, goes to the houses of other men, and there she goes and makes love. You see? Well, you can't do that and claim that you are loving your husband. And so, we have to understand, you know, the profound concept behind it and the ramifications of it. And obviously also the bad consequences that will happen for those who depart from it. And when Israel had done that, decided they're going to have their own temples and their own different places of sacrifice and worship, in essence, it got to the point where God totally rejected them and threw them out of the land, and they were no longer his people. And he told them in Hosea, you see, you are no longer my people and I'm not your God, because they have rejected him. They continue to be religious. A lot of people like to be religious and say, well, I believe in God and have a measure of godliness, you see, and do certain good things in life and do good works. You see, it still defy God at the same time. And those are the people that will come before Christ and say, well, Lord, Lord, you know, we are your people too. We are Christians. You see, we are followers of you. We're called by your name. We preach you. We do works in your name. A lot of good things all around the earth, which they did. God didn't say they didn't do it. Christ didn't say they didn't do it. But he told them because they were doing it on their own, apart from the instructions of God, apart from the law of God. He told them, I don't even know you. We had no fellowship. You know, you thought that you were followers of me. You see, you believed in me. But I didn't believe in you. I don't know you. I didn't have any fellowship with you. You see? And so it's important to remember that. God has to determine the form of worship, the place of it, what things to be done, what songs to be sung, and so forth. Every detail. He made it very plain to Moses that he wants to be involved in every detail in the life of his people, of his wife, of his bride, his future. And so, this is what he says here, in the place where the Lord shall choose. He has to make the choice, and this is the place where you do it, because I command you to do so. Notwithstanding, you may kill and eat flesh within all your gates, after all the desire of your soul, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. In other words, when you need just to eat, not for sacrifices, you know, just regular eating, you can kill anywhere. But when it comes to religious offerings, there is only one place for it. So there is a distinction between the two. While in the wilderness, they had to come all to the tabernacle and to kill their sacrifices. And the reason why they had to do it there, because a lot of the children of Israel, unfortunately, were still idol worshippers. They were sacrificing to demons, and so they did it anywhere. They didn't want to come to the tabernacle, and God told them, if you don't, you're going to be punished. But when they came to the land, it was not an issue. Not that they didn't go after other gods, they still did, but at least the law was altered there. And they all lived, you know, from Dan to Beersheba, and God was not to, you know, about to require them every time they want to eat lunch, you know, to come down to the temple. And so I said, you can kill it wherever, within your gates, after all the desire of your soul, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you, the unclean and the clean may eat thereof. In other words, ceremonially unclean of the people and clean, because that's not a religious offering. In a religious offering, you see, to God, only the clean, you know, the clean ceremonially of the people of Israel, in other words, people that did not have any of the things that were recorded earlier in the book of Leviticus, that makes a people either clean or unclean, you know, if you touch a dead body, if you are unclean by reason of sickness or whatever it may be, and many other things like that. When it comes to sacrifice of God, God demanded only that people who are without spot and blemish, ceremoniously, you know, speaking, they are the only ones that can come and eat it and brought it, you know, that is, bring it to begin with before God. But just ordinary food, that you kill an animal for that purpose, he said, well, it doesn't make a difference if you're clean or unclean, you got to eat. And because that's a different thing. And so that's what he's telling them here. And then he tells them, what is it that they can eat? The unclean and the clean may you eat thereof, as of the gazelle and as the hart. In other words, those among you who are clean or unclean can eat. What is it that you can eat? Only clean animals. You see, it does not mean here that you can kill unclean animals and eat them. He's talking, you know, the first category is about people. The second category is the things that they can eat. Now, that's in essence what Jesus Christ, when he gave that vision to Peter, when he says, you know, rise, kill, and eat. First category of the vision was about people that were portrayed there on, as you know, on the sheet that he brought down, all the four-footed beasts. That was for people, you see. It was not for animals, obviously. People that behave like animals. And the second category after that, when it came to the people there, obviously, you know, in that case, there were no sacrifices, there was no second category. But in either case, you can see in the scripture, if you're not reading it carefully, that is, you're going to get mixed up there. And so, he says, you shall eat things like gazelle or hart or you know, because people went hunting all over the place, and that's what they captured. They said, not things that you were raising in your own house. You know, only the sheep and the cattle, that's what, a different story. And verse 16, only you shall not eat the blood, you shall pour it upon the earth as water, as you mentioned earlier, because that's where the life is, in the blood. And people that eat blood, that is, you know, drink the blood or eat the flesh with the blood, God said you shall be put to death. And people are doing it all the time. You know, there are people who make what they call, you know, blood pudding or things like that. And they don't care about this law of God. They're eating life, a sort of cannibalism. That's the way God regards it. And they don't realize that there's going to be a death penalty for it. And God executes this death penalty in different ways, either by bringing sickness and disease on people, cutting them off in different ways. And then ultimately they're going to have to pay the penalty for it when the time comes, when they stand before the judgment seat, even if they didn't know. And so he says, this is what you do. And verse 17, you may not eat within the gates the tithe of the corn and of the wine and of the your oil or the firstlings of your herd or of the flock. So certain things you can eat and other things you cannot. Things that you need to bring to the temple, be it offerings and sacrifices, you see, on a regular basis, or the tithe that was made holy to be eaten only in the temple, around the temple, you see, those kind of things that you cannot eat at home. Other things, you can. And so this is what he's saying here. In other words, when Israel were all in their land, there was a central place of worship that could all come there. Obviously, today we don't have that, so administration is different. When the people of Israel, who were scattered all around, you know, and into exile, if they could come to the land of Israel, which very few of them could, then they came and kept the feast there and brought their tithe with them. But the majority could not come. You know, they could eat it at home. So there again, you have a different administration based on circumstances there. But this is within the context of the nation of Israel in her own land. And that's what he's saying here. You can eat the tithe of, you know, all these things that you're supposed to bring before God, and know the things which you vow. So again, these are religiously oriented vows. You cannot eat it at home. Know your free will offerings. Know the offering of your hand, but you shall eat them before the Lord your God in the place where the Lord your God shall choose you and your son and your daughter and your manservant and your maidservant and the Levite that is within your gate. So the entirety of the people of Israel and their households, when it came to religious offerings and vows and so forth, and the tithe, which was holy to God, they had to do it only at the temple and nowhere else. And everything else, otherwise, that was not a problem. You could eat it wherever you are. Unless, as we mentioned, unless, you know, if you happen to be in the far away, you know, land, obviously at that point God did not require that you come all the way there every feast, because, you know, it's not everybody could do it. So we have to understand also the changes in administration, but they are within the law. They are not what people, you know, just sit down and say, well, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? It's not what are we going to do about it. What is it that God wants us to do under the circumstances? And he generally gives us rules and regulations, and in cases where we don't have them, that's where people went to God. That's where the high priest, that's where the elders, that's where, you know, the wise men of Israel, you know, the Sanhedrin and so forth. They went before God and fasted before him and cast lots and things like that. And that doesn't mean that we cannot do it today. You know, we cannot go before a temple, obviously, but we can go before God and ask him for guidance and wisdom and understanding how to deal with certain matters, you see, in certain circumstances. And to this very day, God is still there. Jesus Christ is there. His Spirit is in us to lead and guide and direct and lead us to all truth. And unfortunately, a lot of people just get together and they decide from their own mind what they're going to do. And different groups and different organizations all do just the opposite of what the others are doing. They think that they're all pleasing God. That's confusion in Israel, unfortunately, as it says at the end of the book of Judges. You know, in those days there was no king in Israel, no central guidance and direction. Each did that which was right in their own sight. And they all think that they're all pleasing God in that confusion. And so he says, this is what you do here. All of your household, you come before God and shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all that you put your hand unto. Verse 19, take heed to yourself that you forsake not the Levite as long as you live upon the land, because unfortunately that's what they've done many times. And when they've done that, well, the Levites could not teach them the ways of God. When they could not be taught the ways of God, they began to do their own thing, and pretty soon they were into idolatry. And so that happened again and again and again. That's the reason why God is warning them. As long as you are alive on the face of the earth, if you forsake the Levite, trouble comes. So for your own good, never do it, he said to them. And obviously, oftentimes they didn't pay attention to his instructions. Verse 20, and when the Lord your God shall enlarge your border, that's beyond the promised land that he gave them, he was going to expand it as they multiply, which means in the process is going to remove other nations who are there. And of course, people don't like that, especially in today's humanism and the way of thinking. They say, how dare he do that? Take the land of other people. Well, he's the boss. He's the owner of heaven and earth. He can do whatever he wants. You see? And that's what he did when they were obedient to him. And so he says here, when the Lord God shall enlarge your border as he has promised you, and you shall say, I will eat flesh because your soul desires to eat flesh, you may eat flesh after all the desire of your soul. If the place which the Lord your God shall choose to put his name there be too far from you, that could be either, you know, whether you're in the Galilee or you're in the Negev, and the temple is right in the center, and that's a long way to go to eat lunch or dinner, you see. He says you can't do it, obviously. This is the instruction there, or whatever, you know, you end up in other countries because of exile, captivity. You see, at this point he's not talking about that, but that becomes a part of this law, you know, based on this principle. What do you do when you're far away from the temple and you can't make it there? We're not talking again about spiritual offerings that Israel could bring even when in exile, only when they came to Jerusalem during the holidays. You see? Otherwise, they did not offer those things. And unless you lived nearby, you know, you could do it. But if you did not, you had to wait for the holiday when you went to Jerusalem. And then you brought all your free, you know, vows and offerings and so forth. But this is talking about just wanting to eat food, meat, you see, barbecue. Nothing to do with religious sacrifice. And so he said, if the place which the Lord your God shall choose to put his name there be too far from you, then he shall kill of your herd and of your flock, which the Lord has given you, as I have commanded you, and you shall eat within your gates, wherever you are, after all the desire of your soul. Howbeit, as the gazelle and as the hart is eaten, so shall ye eat thereof. You see, actually eat only clean food, not anything you want. The unclean and the clean may eat thereof alike. Again, you have to understand the biblical language here. Yeah, the clean and the unclean, meaning the people who are either defiled ceremonially, you see, or are not defiled ceremonially. And this is what he's talking about here again. Only be steadfast, verse 23, in not eating the blood. Again, he's warning them, and many times he did, because people were doing it, the nations were doing it, and he constantly warned them against doing it. A lot of people on the face of the whole earth are doing it, and most of the children of Israel are still doing it. He said the only place where you can buy decent food, decent meat, that is, in accordance with the law, you have to go to the Jewish community to a butcher shop, and they are the only people who do it properly and right. All the rest are just whatever you buy in the market. What's not done properly was not killed properly, it was not bled properly. And therefore, that's the reason why the Orthodox Jews, or most Jews, and for that matter, there are a lot of people who are not Jews at all, but they recognize the benefits from that. They go to a Jewish butcher shop, and that's why the kosher industry is a very great industry. You know, it's an expanding industry, and the majority of the people who are using it are not even Jews. But anyway, it's because of that. They realize that at least in the killing of the animal, they've done it properly, and so that prevents diseases from being passed on, you see, because it is in the blood that they circulate. And so this is what he says here again, only be steadfast in not eating the blood, for the blood is the life. Besides the fact that it carries in it, you know, the germs and the viruses and all that, the blood is the life. And you shall not eat the life with the flesh. Don't be a cannibal, that's all there is to it. Anytime anybody eats blood, you know, with the meat that was not properly bled, he's a cannibal. You see? And that's how God regards those people, and for that he's going to require, as he said from the beginning of time, from Genesis, that if a person, you know, if any human being kills another human being, he shed innocent blood, and by blood the land shall be purged. And he extended that even to animals. If animals kill one another, he's going to require it from that particular animal to divide one another. That was a time when he did not allow any killing, murder, you see, bloodshed, either in the family of man or the bestial, in other words, the beast of the field. So that was a law at the time. Obviously, things changed in that time. Then the animals became devouring animals. Another spirit entered into them, demonic influence affected them and affected the mind of men, all began to murder one another. But in either case, it's against the law of God, and a penalty has to be paid. That's why oftentimes when God punishes a nation, he punishes also the beast of the field, because of many other things, you know, that are involved in terms of bestiality and other things like that, and devouring, you know, and destroying one another. And so it says, you shall not eat it, you shall pour it out upon the earth as water. You shall not eat it, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, which means if you don't, it will not go well with you. You're going to have problems, health problems, and we're not even knowing where those diseases came from. God is going to place them upon you, and you would not even realize it. You say, whether you know the law of God or not, it's neither here nor there. All around the earth, people are paying the penalty for it, and they don't know why. And so it says, that it may go well with you and with your children, when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of the Eternal, and the day will come when the whole earth is going to be obedient and bow the knees before Jesus Christ, the God of the whole earth, who is going to reign upon this earth, the Messiah, the Redeemer, and they're all going to obey the law of Moses, because the moral law of Moses is the law of the Lord. He commanded it, and it was not something Jewish, it had nothing to do with the Jews. If there were no Jews, it would have been other people. You see, it has nothing to do with the people of Israel. Any other nation that God would have chosen would have come under the same laws, and their task would have been to teach all mankind just like that. The same way, same truth. These things have been from the Garden of Eden. A lot of what is known as the Law of Moses has been from the Garden of Eden. You know, obviously minus many of the rituals and things that he had added at that point. You see, but the basics of the Law of God, including the eating of clean and unclean, that was an eternal law from the beginning. And of that, Jesus Christ said, "Don't think that I came to do away with the Torah or the prophets. Not one jot or one tittle is going to be passed from it until heaven and earth, you know, is gone." So that's for all mankind. A lot of people, they say, well, that's old stuff. That's for the Jews. You know, that was only until Christ. You know, even a lot of Jews that come to the knowledge of Christ, they think, well, that's the way it is. It was only until Christ, because they've been deceived, you know, by ignorant people that came from the mold of the, you know, the Revelation 17 churches, and they believe it. You know, Christ did away with that. He hasn't done anything with that. He said it very plainly. I haven't done any, you know, I have not done away with it. And people don't believe him. They call him a liar, and they claim to be his servants. And they honor him and worship him, exalt him, and they keep a measure of his commandments and teachings and things like that. But as for the others, they have contempt for them. They despise them because they've been deceived to believe that lie is the truth, that light is darkness, that darkness is light, and so forth. It's only when you study the Law of Moses that you understand what is it that Christ was all about. What did he teach? What did he say is still there? And how to understand it? And people that go directly to the so-called New Testament, they don't know what they're reading. No clue to it, you know, no clue to understand it, to comprehend it properly. That's why God said, unless you remember the Law of Moses, speaking to all of Israel, the end time, specific, and for all mankind for that matter, he said, I'm going to bring an utter destruction upon the face of the earth. Because it is a universal law of a universal God that reigns over heaven and earth. And it is for all to obey, including the beast of the field. Certain things they are not supposed to do. And so this is what we read here. You shall bring it, you know, before God. That is, pour the blood. Make sure you don't eat the wrong things. And do all the things which are right in the sight of God. Only your holy things, verse 26, which you have, and your vows you shall take and go unto the place which the Lord shall choose. And he mentions that several times. And you shall offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood, upon the altar of the Lord your God. You offer them both to God. And the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out against the altar of the Lord your God. And if you, you know, want to study those details, you read the book about the temple. For example, the one by Alfred Edersheim. Speaking about the temple, you know, the temple, that's the title, its ministry and services. And then you read a lot of details. So you can go to the Mishnah, you know, wherever you want to go, find out, you know, all those details, how they were supposed to pour the blood and how they did it and all the details concerning that, all the mechanism that went through it. Well, that's became a reality. And people, you know, saw that all their lives when they came to the temple and they participated in that. And that was the Law of God. And when the temple is going to be rebuilt again, the temple, as some people would call it, the temple of Ezekiel, in other words, the one that is spoken by Ezekiel, in the last eight chapters, that's when God is going to reside in it. That is the Messiah, the King of Israel. You see, all these things are going to be there because that's what you read there. All these things have a purpose, and of course, people have been deceived to believe that, well, everything's up to Christ, and after that, forget about it. That's old stuff. It's not for us. And unfortunately, the overwhelming majority of the people of God who even have the Holy Spirit have been deceived to believe these lies. You see, because they're not reading the entirety of the whole book, the whole story. So they don't understand even when they're reading the words of Paul, what he's talking about. And so, we read in verse 28, observe and hear all this, you see, not just observe, you know, but hear also, not only hear, but observe, you know, faith and works. That's what James is talking about. You observe and hear all these words which I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever. You see, not for 20 years, 30 years, not until the time of Christ, not until his sacrifice, forever. All that depends on whether you obey the Law of Moses or not. And it's as simple as that. And one of these days, people are going to realize that, and they are not going to be contentious anymore of the law of God, or the nature of God, or the mind of God, you see, which is epitomized by His law that He gave to Moses, you see. And He is Himself is the epitome of it. That's why it's called the Word of God. Yeah, you might say it's the Word of Moses, which He gave to Moses. You know, it's still the same thing. And God is the one to begin with, the Father, you know, the supreme ruler of heaven and earth, El Elyon, the Most High, is the one that gave this law to Israel through His Son, the one that was not His Son at the time. You know, He was the King of Israel. It became His Son. He gave it to Israel. He gave it to Moses. He gave it to all mankind, beginning with His bride, which is supposed to teach all the children, you see, the law of her husband, the law of her father, the law of God. And that's what He's saying here. You do all those things, and it's going to be well with you forever when you do that which is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God. And that's what the deception is all about. That's what Christ was saying. You know, people ask Him, okay, you know, the disciples, what is going to happen with this temple? What is the sign of your coming? And He did not answer that question. He just said, take heed. You see, take heed, lest you be deceived. And He's not talking specifically about them in person, because they knew better. But He's talking about all future generations. For many shall come. Not few, the many. In other words, the majority who come in the name of Christ are claimed to be, you know, followers of Christ, ministers of the gospel, Christians and so forth. They are false brethren, false prophets, the liars. This is many. You see, and the word for many in the Bible is generally speaking in modern terms the majority. And the majority of the prophets of Israel were all as false prophets. Only the very few of them were the true prophets of God. One of the prophets of Israel that were the prophets of God. All the others were the prophets of Israel. That's the difference between the two. You see? The prophets of God spoke the words of God. The prophets of Israel spoke whatever was convenient for Israel to hear, whatever was pleasing, you see? And to this very day it's the same. And Christ said, many shall come in My name. The majority of the prophets of Israel on the whole earth that claim to come in His name are liars. They shall come in My name saying that I'm the Christ, and they're going to tell you an awful lot about Christ, about His sacrifice, about His salvation, about what He'd done for you. And they'll make you, you know, believe it. And you'll believe it. And many did. And you'll be in your own mind thinking that you are worshipping Jesus Christ. And you exalt Him, and you honor Him, and you obey many of the things that He said, and you may be devout and sincere and so forth and all that. And it says, I shall do all that and deceive many. How do you do that? Well, very simple. Tell them all about Christ, and then tell them to reject His law, the law of Moses. And that's exactly what they've done. That's what the deception is. And then in the process, they added all kind of lies. You see, once they've created their own religion, then they added many other lies. You know, the doctrine of heaven and hell is one of them. Trinity is another one. Many others. An awful lot of lies. You see, but basically, once you don't teach the law of Moses, well, you end up with many lies too. It becomes natural to go in that direction. And that's what he's saying here. And Moses said, you better be careful. If you want life to be good for you forever, no hunger, no pain, no suffering, no indignities of life, no sickness and disease, no war, no bloodshed, no crime. You see, just perfect life, utopian life. You're going to have to obey this law that God gave me to give to you. You see, because that's the law of paradise. That's the law of the Garden of Eden. And as long as Adam and Eve were willing to obey that, things were well. But as soon as they departed from that, well, they created a chain reaction, and to this very day we're paying the penalty for it. You see? But had people turned away from their evil deeds, they would have had paradise too. And so, this is what he's saying to them. You do those things which are good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God. How do you know what is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God? The Lord your God. How do you know that? Where do you go to find that out? Who can tell you? Any human being, you know, concocted from his own brain, tells you what he thinks. No, he made it very plain. The things that I command you, that's the thing that will tell you what is right and what is pleasing in the sight of the Lord your God. And that's what God constantly referred to it through the prophets. And that's what he told them also when he came in the flesh, in person. Don't think that I came to do away with the Torah, you know, the Torah that I gave to Moses or the prophets. I didn't. You better keep it, he said. The Pharisees sit in the seat of Moses. That means they're teaching the law of Moses. You know, beside all the other things they had taught, they had no business teaching. But at least the law of Moses, he said. They sit in the seat of Moses. And whatever they tell you to do in accordance to the law of Moses, he said, you better do it. You see? Just don't follow, you know, the wrong example. Their own personal example, which is not obviously according to the law of Moses. So you warn them. Make a difference between the wheat and the chaff. If the words are of Moses, you better obey them. If it's not, obviously don't. You see, so their example oftentimes was not the law of Moses. But when it comes to that, and so here it is, to command his own people, to the so-called, you know, the church that some people think, well, he's inventing now something new, you know, a new organization, new entity called the church. That's the command he gave to the church. You believe, you know, you follow the Pharisee that sits on the seat of Moses, that teaches you the law of Moses, and you better check up on him. And how are you going to do that? Well, you read the book of the law, and you find out if what he says is exactly in accordance with the law of Moses. And that's exactly what the Bereans were doing. When Paul was coming to them and teaching them the law of Moses, and everything that God said about it, and about Jesus Christ, you see, the King, the Savior, the Ruler, the Deliverer, the one who gave that law to Moses, they said, okay, with all due respect, we're going to check on you. And so, God said, those people are noble. They opened the Scriptures, they opened the law of Moses, they opened the prophets, and they were checking the Apostle Paul. And they realized everything he was saying was exactly what the law of Moses and the prophets were saying. You see? That has never changed. It's only the ignoramuses, the blind, that they deceive to this very day. They may think they're intelligent, they go to seminaries, or, you know, cemeteries, some people call it, and learn about their religion, their theology, their catechism, their teachings, their so-called Christian principles, doctrines, ethics, and things like that, mixture of truth and error, which is called vomit by God, and that becomes a religion. God wouldn't have anything to do with it. No more they would have anything to do with somebody, you know, no matter how much you love that person, if when he invites you to dinner, he puts vomit on your plate. You see? You're going to puke at it. And that's the way God feels about the religion of this world. So-called Christianity or Judaism. If it is a mixture of truth and error, it's vomit in his sight. And he's not a respecter of persons. We must go to the law of Moses and know exactly what God said, what Jesus Christ said, what his father gave him. At the time, it was not his father, just the El Elyon, the Most High. You see? That's the only law that we live by. And when God said, men shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, that's the word he's talking about. You see? There is no other thing. No other law, no other religion, no other doctrine, no other teaching, no other God. Unless you want to follow the God of this world and his religions, who appears before people as an angel of light, and his ministers, as Paul said, he's got a lot of ministers around. The ones that Jesus Christ said, beware of them. They come in my name and you know, they teach a lot about me, and then they deceive you. So you go to that, and you see what that God said, and you obey that voice that he spoke through either Moses, or later on the prophets, and later on he came to in person, and then through his disciples, and so forth. You see? And this book is right in front of you. A lot of people have several copies of it, different translations, and they have variations, and some of them are better than others, but still the basics are there. And you notice, generally speaking, the overwhelming majority of them, no matter how different they are, a lot of the things that were written in the law of Moses are more or less the same. And that's what he's telling them. It's going to be good for you forever when you do that which is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God. And the only way you can find out is if you go to the law of Moses, to the prophets, to the writings of the disciples that you understand based on comprehension of what the law of Moses and the prophets are all about. Verse 29, and when the Lord your God shall cut off the nations from before you, that is, if you are obedient, obviously, whether you go in to dispossess them, and you dispossess them, and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you do be not ensnared to follow them. After that, you know, they are destroyed from before you. You know, you destroy them, and then you pick up their customs and habits and idolatry and all that. And that's what people do. They like to always learn the new ways. You see, They call it modern. All the time they call it modern. You know, the old stuff is old-fashioned. No good anymore. You see? We want modern things, new things. That's what the children of Israel were saying. And so they ended up with a totally different religion. And constantly in trouble, and to this very day. You see? Both the so-called Judaism or Christianity or Islam, you know, all children of Abraham, they all have rejected the pure religion of Abraham, which was the same as Moses. Obviously, with the additions that were given to Moses and to Israel. And so he said, you take it yourself, that you be not ensnared and don't follow in other customs. And you inquire not after their gods, saying, how use these nations to serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. And so people said, well, you know, we know that this, you know, Christmas is pagan, or this is pagan, or whatever it may be, but we are using it to worship Christ, our Lord. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Again, Mordecai Joseph, greetings all of God's people. Until next time.